I would propose to start with the talks and ask you, Nicolas, to start with your brief input. Thank you.
It's been a while, so good to be here. I want to give you a very short recap of the project I presented in the morning. For those here on the panel and haven't seen it, we have actually started in last year in 2021 a project which is called the European Perspective, which brings together public service media who share online news online content, and the wealth of stories on offer aims to help Europeans to contextualize trending topics such as the pandemic, climate change, but also the Ukraine war recently, and get a better understanding about what neighboring countries think about these challenges. The initiative's backbone is supported by EBU-developed technology, and each participating organization shares its stories through a digital news hub, where they are translated into multiple languages using the EBU's Eurovox tool, and then they are offered by each of the participating members on their webpage in a widget. You heard earlier that those who followed Eurovox, I think, was also presented at this conference. So the project leverages the capabilities of AI for automated translation, but we have a human check system in the inbuilt, of course, because the quality needs to be very good. In the first year, we had 11 public service media companies participating, and the project already proved to be quite successful. We had over 6,500 stories shared, and we had over 45 million views. So that it's a clear interest. There's a clear interest from audiences. Now we have the project is co-funded by the EU, and also the second phase, which just recently started, has received funding or will receive funding by the EU, and we're very happy about that. In the second phase, we want to extend the content on offer. We also want to extend the partner base, have more people involved. And what we also are looking at is creating a special fact-checking mechanism within this project, and also a social media strategy further developed to reach more audiences, in particular younger audiences. And also we are very happy because at the second phase, we don't only have public service media organization, but also AFP has joined, and we have the Constructive Institute based in Denmark participating on a particular part of the project, which is a public service algorithm. So you'll ask what that is. We want to, and this is connected, of course, to the research and recommendation system, which aims at giving access to relevant input information and content, but also to open up the filter bubble. So to make sure that people don't stay in the filter bubble, but that they have a broader view on issues. So that's roughly what is our project about. What I would like to mention is that this project aims to contribute to what we would call a European public sphere. And that is an idea where we hope that content offers, but maybe also other offers, work together, and that these offers are all rooted in core EU values, such, of course, the respect for human dignity, equality, inclusion, the rule of law, and of course, data protection, privacy, and that they all offer trusted content for audiences, so that audience who will be in this European public sphere can be sure that the content they find, they can trust in, and are sort of in a safe space. Now, the conditions to create such a public sphere are multifold. Of course, we need support for media innovation. And as I said, I mean, this project is co-funded by the EU, which is a very good thing. And I know that also many other projects which go in similar direction are receiving co-funding, and that is a very good development. It's different funding schemes, but also including the program Horizon, which supports research in particular. So that is a good move. More is certainly necessary. And I think what is necessary also is that the projects better communicate among themselves, so to exchange experience on what they do. Then for public service media, what is very important is that they have the ability to participate in innovation. And for that, they need a future-proof public service remit, because in some countries, they are a little bit limited in this respect. So that is, of course, necessary that they have the flexibility and also the necessary funds to participate in these innovation activities. Then, of course, we need a good regulatory environment. And since European media offers will continue to depend on having prominence and be findable on the big tech platforms, on social media in particular, the regulatory framework continues to be extremely important. I mean, we just have almost ended big debates about DSA, DMA, and important steps have been taken. Just maybe to mention one particular element of the DSA where we're not so happy is that the platforms have, of course, a considerable influence on access to information and opinion making. And unfortunately, the DSA does not really foresee any specific mechanism on this. So that is something we would have liked to see, but maybe this can be addressed in a different framework.
Great. Nicola, thank you.
And another issue.
Nicola?
Yes, sorry.
Sorry, Nicola.
Yes.
Is it okay for you if we do the rest in the second round and give the other speakers the possibility as well, since Ms. Kaili has just 30 minutes for us? Thank you. So please, Paul Nemetz, could you please let us hear what your thoughts are about the topic? Paul, can you hear us? Paul, you are muted still. And apparently cannot hear us. Well, actually, I cannot see how to cope with this yet, except for me proceeding with my part of the talk. So I'm Alexander Baracic. I'm chair of the Cultural Broadcasting Archive, and which is a podcasting platform for mostly community radio content. And so the speciality is to have a diverse context reflected in the content, like people with migration, a background, LGBTQI, activism in social activism, etc. And what I've been introducing today was the project European Cultural Backbone, which is an idea to build a network of a federated network of various civil society platforms. And we would like to do this via exchanging metadata. So at each node, at each hub, you can see every metadata, so to say. And so this gives each platform the possibility to run a search engine and provide you with information from other platforms as well. So this is in general the principle of it. And we fortunately got funding from the European Cultural Foundation to set up a pilot with five initial platforms. and to run this as a first testing thing, so to say, if it works and how it works and what results then will come out of the search engines then at each platform. As there's one thing I wanted to point out at my and have pointed out at my talk in the morning. It's a great thing that the European Commission understood that their money should be taken and to invest into infrastructure, European, unique European sovereign infrastructure in the media sector to build up an autonomous European alternative for European digital public space. We think that's really essentially to do so, and it's absolutely clear that public service broadcasters are the main pillar in our media landscape to provide here the news and trustable information. And therefore, absolutely understandable that good move to set a first step in a direction to have these public service provider not only on a national level, but to establish the idea to have this public digital infrastructure also on a European level. However, what I also like to stress out is that we think it's to show the whole diversity and plurality of the European digital public space, or we think it's part of it, is the need to involve also civil society and also to have some sort of a back channel for the audience or for citizens to get involved in the debate, to have a complete version of a digital public space. And this is something we would like to stress, that in order to involve civil society media and civil society initiatives as well, there are specific measurements necessary, especially on the funding level, but also giving access to technical tools would be helpful to help civil society media to manage the digital transformation. Fine, that was from my side. Paul, are you with us? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I have borrowed a computer here. So let's try this.
Great. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think we largely talk about the same thing. Just to come back, I'm a proponent of having a simple tech platform in the legal sense of the word, which brings together TV content of journalistic nature and focused on political news and documentaries from all sources which have this journalistic ambition, force as state, you know, public TV, but also private TV, and also others who produce this type of content, you know, like civil society or free TV stations, citizens TV, and things like that. Now, I want to be very clear. What is the advantage of having such a platform compared to a model which says the play out will always take place over the Mediathek of the national station, which I understand is the EBU model? The advantage is that people in Hungary will be able to see through this platform content from all other member states in their language, because the technical service this platform will provide is first search and recommendation system, second translation, and third streaming. So if this platform is the entry point to the content from all member states and then translates into all languages, first in undertitling, then people from Hungary will be able to see all the news content which they are interested in particular also about their own country, in Hungarian, but produced by all the other stations. This is not provided by a model which only plays out the exchanged content over the national Mediathek, because the Hungarian station will certainly not bring the critical content, let's say, from Denmark or the Czech Republic or Slovenia or Germany or whatever. But I think Both models can exist in addition to each other, alongside each other. I don't think that anybody takes away anything from anybody. I think the EBU model is fine, but in addition, we need this European entry point. And I would also say there is a little bit of allowed symbolism in this to have one thing which is not just national in terms of the national station, you know, emphasize the national this, the national that, but we have one entry point which is genuinely European and which as such represents the full plurality and the fantastic diversity of all 27 member states' news content. And of course, through a good search, people will then be able to compose their own program and own content, and what they produce and what they want to see then, of course, will be very diverse. So it provides the necessary freedom. So to be clear, this platform will not do editorial services. It will just be a technological platform. And of course, its governance must be removed from the EU institutions. It must be removed from governments, like good public TV is removed from governments. But we must also be clear, this cannot be provided by the market. We have an experience in Europe in many sectors to mix public and private infrastructures. We have private banks and public banks in Europe. We have private healthcare providers and public healthcare providers. We have public TV and private TV. And I think this mix approach, we have to build it into the future. And so it must be very clear that this platform, as a European public infrastructure element, one of many, will be and has to be financed from the European budget, and I'm confident it will not be extremely expensive in comparison to the overall size of the budget, and it will not solve all the problems of this world, but it will be a mosaic stone in strengthening both European democracy, but also domestic democracy in those countries which have problems with the freedom of press and which have particular problems with with control of government on the TV. By the way, my last remark is, since my director general is also responsible for the rule of law, the European Association of Judges, of highest judges of the constitutional courts, and have suspended memberships from Hungary and Poland. I note that the EBU has not done this. I think it would be good if the EBU also takes a very clear stance on the relationship between government and public TV stations in Hungary and Poland. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul, for your input. Maybe we can dwell on this later on. Ms. Kaili, are you with us?
Yes.
Yes, great. Thank you for joining our discussion. What I would like to ask you is, what is your view on building a European sovereign infrastructure for a digital public space?
Well, when I talk after Paul Nemitz, I think he basically covered all the main points. I would like, in any case, first to thank Alexander Baradzis. Thank you for the invitation to speak and also all your initiatives. I won't be able to stay in the whole panel. I'll try to stay a bit more because I'm at an official mission abroad. Coming back to your question about the digital infrastructure and also sovereignty for Europe, I think nobody would say no, it's not just important, it's actually essential in today's digital economy. We live in a hyper-connected world, and during the pandemic, we even more moved all our work, education, and also social life online. We spent increasingly more time. The metaverse became an everyday discussion, how we can have an online virtual environment of basically copying or like having a twin of everything that goes on offline, which is challenging also our legal systems, our legislation at the European level. And I think it's really essential for us to take more initiatives in order to achieve a harmonized environment. If also we consider that the value of data economy will become at least 6-7% of the GDP in just in the next 2-3 years, I think these trends will continue to grow, and the value that's going to be created online and the access online, it's going to be crucial for not just the European economy, but also the European democracy. And the foundations of the internet actually was openness and freedom. But we see that it's dominated actually by the private and powerful corporations, that they offer great services nevertheless. But still, it's supposed to be an online public space. So I think it's very important to try to achieve that. We have the tools, we have the infrastructure. We can have a public sphere where information and data flows will not be controlled by gatekeepers. And that we will be able, that we will be able to, let's say, break the oligopolies and in the end, like services like even Netflix, they will start to have competition, which would improve actually the services for all of us, and especially for the Europeans, that not only do we have access online that they don't have online. I mean, TV can happen now already on our devices, but also translated instantly in our languages. Not everybody speaking one of the big European languages, and they don't have access to quality information, or information and news are controlled by government. There is a tendency to do so, even in democracies. So I think that in order also to create competition and to break this economic model of attention economy, I think we can, because companies try to get our attention, they have tailored content, controlled and personalized newsfeed. And of course, in the first like pages, you see what the algorithm of a private company wants you to see. So I think that this online space is not as public and as open as we would like to have. So I think the solution would be to invest in it, as Paul Namit said, into having a European possibility of accessing information, give options to citizens, as we said. And I think to create a European streaming platform with a fair search engine, but also automatic translation that is possible technically, is a great also example and paradigm to leverage technology to build infrastructure in Europe for Europeans, aligned with the European standards and principles. And this last comment, I really want to underline, one thing is to have full respect of national content and to ensure that European languages will overcome all the barriers and be accessible in Europe and beyond. And another thing is also to have like real European content, even by design, to have such a possibility. We just have only very few paradigms in our online space. So I think it's a great opportunity. The timing is here, it's now. We saw big disinformation campaigns challenging our democracies. And I think we really need to act. With the pandemic, we realized that all the technologies are here. We can achieve anything we want. Now it's time to build our strategy and to allow to test such innovations. And then citizens should decide if they want them to grow bigger, if they would select them, if it would be an option for them. And then we have to adjust. And even you, all the associations, have to create also European layer of protection of IP rights, but also of access for all Europeans into such a content of high quality. So thank you for giving me this opportunity. I think I basically highlighted what Mr. Nevin said.
Thank you, Eva. This sounds really promising and encouraging. Maybe I'd like to add another question. How do you see then the role of civil society initiatives, civil society media in such a landscape, such a media landscape or a public sphere in Europe?
Well, not just here, but everywhere. I think civil society must be a big part of what we are trying to achieve. We have to involve all relevant actors. We could assume that private businesses and the market, they can do and they have the one digital infrastructure. But we need to safeguard also fundamental rights. We need to safeguard our principles and civil society organizations. They bring pluralism. They bring this independence, this element that we are talking about, and also critical thinking, which I think they make them crucial partners in anything, in everything, actually, we're trying. And they are, I would say the parliament is as close as it gets to the citizens, but this could be challenged by the civil society. They are closer, they are like on the ground, and they can understand what offline should be online and what are the needs. Definitely, I believe there is a very important role there, but still it has to be, I mean, inclusive. It has to have all different aspects and all different organizations from the civil society.
Great, thank you. This also sounds encouraging. So I understand you that there should be also political initiatives to support the civil society to manage to do so, to participate and to engage in the digital public sphere.
Well, actually, we already funded, I think, it's 3 projects already from the Commission. In the Parliament, we have called for extra funding to test similar platforms that they would be used to take down the geo-blocking and the barriers we have for content online. Even just to like be able to have access, even if we wouldn't be able to translate, I think it's important for European citizens that they are free to travel to be able to have access for content back home. We have the Horizon Europe, we have the Connecting Europe facility, we have the Digital Europe program that they provide sources of funding. And I think even now with the Recovery and Resilience facility, that actually it responds to the need to connect more and to have more European strategies on the table. At least 20% of this investment should be the digital infrastructure, digital objectives should be achieved. And this means connectivity, which is exactly what we're talking about. And it's also digitalization, just to bring the content online. If it's not, we have to bring it online. It's also more safe, and we can have an amazing, valuable content archive of everything that our culture is about at all European member states, and to be able to have access to that. If you want to see and watch and have access to a documentary about, I don't know, Greece, the Greek history, unless you wait when the public TV will broadcast something, or if it's available on YouTube, you don't really have access to it. So it would have been an amazing opportunity to create such a library, and it could be enhanced with video that would represent our culture, our cultural activities. As I said, the European Commission already announced the European consortia that they would receive in total, I think 2 million each, to develop such media platforms, similar, but I hope that they could be also interoperable. And we are trying also to create, it was mentioned also in the beginning, a better rule book for the digital market and to help competition and also to safeguard our principles online. So I think we have the legal certainty. I think we have the European environment and rules. Now we just need to provide such solutions and then see if citizens want that or how we can improve it furthermore.
Okay, thank you for that. Maybe before we briefly switch to Paul Rübig to hear his view on the relevance of such sovereign European digital public infrastructure, I would like to point briefly out that civil society, media would be or are not really included in the platform projects yet, which I essentially think is quite necessary to have them as they are yet. So the public service broadcasters are the main pillar in our media landscape. However, civil society media are not represented in the project yet, and I think this would be a necessary further step to include them as well. But maybe we can talk about this later. I would like to give now Paul Rübig the opportunity also to give...
Sorry, you said yet, so I think this was the key. We have to start building in, and then everybody will have the possibility to engage more. Paul Rübig actually is my dearest colleague that I respect, chair of the Science and Technology Options Assessment, whose core thinking was we need to provide options for the citizens. And I think this is also essential in this discussion.
Thank you. So, Paul, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you so much also for giving us a chance to have a debate on this very important area. Also thanks to Eva Kiley, you know, she was a good friend and still is a good friend of mine in STOA within European Parliament. And you know, STOA is Scientific Technology Options Assessment. And it's exactly about what we are talking today. I'm now a member of the European Economic and Social Committee. We are the so-called organized civil society. We have the entrepreneurs, so we have the trade unions, we have civil society organizations, and the whole thing got a very good framework. So I am not a politician anymore. I am now an expert, and you know, an expert has the freedom of talking about things which maybe are not always politically correct, but it should give some impact into the debate. And the options assessment, I think, is a key of our foresight strategy for the European media space. And as you know, from the early beginning in European Parliament, I was in charge of the roaming directive. At least it's a digital single market on telecom. Because if we create competition between all the telecoms, it will give a big benefit to the consumers. And, you know, 100% of the people are consumers, so we should take care what we can deliver for the consumers. And the freedom of choice and the freedom of speech is something very important. And in a democratic society where we are proud to live in, of course, it's clear that not everybody has the same opinion, and that's good. So, and that we have a broad variety of opinions. And I think the base of a good working together is to be tolerant to other opinions, and having respect to other opinions than our own. So in our economic and social committee, we also took up now the so-called silo and pipe strategy. Because the truth is, we have a lot of silos, but the communication pipes are still very intransparent, and we need, of course, much better communication patterns. And we only can deliver good communication ways when we are good in analytics. So how can we get better information through machine learning? How can we get better information through artificial intelligence? And how public and transparent is this knowledge? And we all know that the algorithm which we use, the dependency, the one side to keep it secret. But on the other hand, I think the public has the right to get the knowledge about which algorithm are using my data. And the question is my data free of charge? Or is it necessary to get a license to use my data, which I have given? So in the media area, we have, of course, the one side, we have the area of production. And, you know, also the production has to live from something. So we have to take care that highly qualified people are working in this area of media production. And also the freedom of choice in this area is, I think, from highest importance. And on the other hand, of course, we have consumers who also want to have the free choice. And therefore, it's always a question how the different areas are financed. And, you know, the principle is that infrastructure, of course, is a public issue, where, of course, with public procurement, we should try to get the best solutions for our citizens. But everybody of us is also a taxpayer. So if it's necessary, we want to have it on the best conditions. And in our Economic and Social Committee, I'm now the rapporteur on science and research. And I did now one report on the European research area. And, you know, overall in Europe, we spend approximately 450 billion every year into research and science. And therefore, it's necessary to see what we can do within this area to have also the communication patterns more on the debate and also on the area how to finance this better communication within European Union. And I'm also in the governing board of the European Institute of Technology, where we now started a new kick on cultural industries. As Eva Keile said, 8% of the GDP is created in the cultural industries. And therefore, startups, scale-ups, and at least higher education in this field, I think it's a core principle to get better activities in this field. So the competition of opinions in the public area is key. And I think it's clear that we should look how research and science can give us new innovation, especially in new learning and teaching technologies, and learning technologies, because with AI, with machine learning, with a lot of new algorithms which we can use, of course, that could help, especially our young people. And, you know, a lot of young people feel cut out of our political decision-making. Maybe the same like the elderly people. They are also cut out of our information systems. So how can we take care on the young and on the elderly people in the European communication space? And I think that's the principles where we should work on. And I'm very happy that EBU and our European Commission is working on these activities. And of course, it's very decisive for the future how our communication could be a place for fair ideas and understanding from each other. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul, for your input. You brought a strong input now from maybe from a data perspective, and I understood that you also emphasized on this side that we need to get insight into this area, into this data silos and how algorithms work, and understand in the end that this would need us ourselves to run ourselves our own data lakes and own algorithmic infrastructures to have a possibility to have influence on that?
Yes, you know, in Florence, in Italy, we put all results out of research programs, and we had up to now 9 research programs with the Horizon Europe program now acting. We invested billions of euros in finding new and better solutions for our citizens. And I think the access to this knowledge is not used in the right way. So what can we do to use the knowledge which we financed through our taxpayers? How can we use this knowledge for the kindergarten, for the university, for small and medium-sized enterprises, and for the civil society? So the storytelling of what we found out is, I think, something where we could do much more. And it's also for all kind of broadcasting. The basic idea to put innovation in the middle of the debate and looking into this hidden knowledge, I think that could have heavy impact.
Thanks. Nicola, I understood that EBU has also a strong focus on the one hand, developing, let me call it a fair algorithm, to have it transparent and to find new ways coming from a perspective that the algorithms work to keep people as long as possible on the platform, into a direction to have some sort of plurality in the news feed they then can consume. What is your approach to that?
I think the main and most important thing is to know the algorithms, what their purpose,
maybe this was a misunderstanding.
They have.
I directed this question to Nicola. Apparently, it was not clear enough.
Okay.
Sorry, Nicola, did you hear me?
Okay.
Could you briefly repeat it?
I repeat it. Now, just taking up the ball from Paul, who dwelled on this questions of algorithms and data, my understanding was that the EBU in this cool project you presented, the question of fair algorithms and transparency and getting away from approach that the algorithm just should take care that people are as long as possible on the platform. What is your approach to this topic?
Indeed, yes. I mean, what we want to develop in this second phase of our project is what we call a public service algorithm. And the idea is, of course, I mean, we want to motivate people to look at the content we offer, but in a relevant way so that they find what they really are looking for. But at the same time, a lot of research mechanisms, algorithms close people in their bubbles. And that we want to avoid. So we want to combine a search for relevant content with giving access to a broader plurality of content. So open up people's minds. We want to do this in the context of this particular project I presented, but not only. I think our members are developing approaches and algorithms of that kind also generally for their content. And that is a great chance because, of course, a public services broadcaster's aim is not to have certain content particularly viewed because for monetization reasons, but we want to give a broad access to a plurality of content, which broadens people's access and ideas. Really, that is what we want to try to do.
And how will you achieve that? I mean, such recommendation systems strongly relate or rely on former usages of a platform, for example, do you then collect user data and then try to match it with, I don't know, content usually proposed to other user groups, or what is the core idea behind that?
This is a difficult question. I mean, frankly, you will have to ask more in detail the people who program it and work on it. But the idea is indeed to, if I understand it correctly, because I'm not the expert on the matter, but to benefit from experience and also to rank in a way, or rank, or let's say rank is maybe not the right word for it, but to label certain content according to certain criteria and review all the time with the experience of audiences in order to make sure that you have this broad approach. But I mean, I'm not a programming expert in that matter. So that is something maybe we can get back to it in a little while when our people, the technical experts, also have started working on this and can explain it a little bit in a more detailed way.
Okay, thank you. I think it's also not a really easy answer how to get there, because it's just an abstract wish, let me, or approach to have plurality while a recommender, but it will be technically not so easy to fulfill that, it seems to me. Paul Nemetz, you also brought in this plurality aspect, especially you were dwelling on Hungary, the situation in Hungary and Poland. What is your thought about this new technical means and how to get plurality into this? You published a book on AI together with Matthias Pfeffer. What's your view about that?
Well, my view is that the technology of networks, the internet and of streaming, and also automatic translation, offers new positive possibilities to increase choice of people. But I also hold the view that we need to learn from the experience of shaping through law the public's communication space in order to ensure that the way we communicate in this public sphere is conducive to democracy functioning well. So I think what we're discussing about here is basically shaping the future communication space where people build their political opinion, and we know that more than 50% of people in the United States and in Europe now build their political opinion on the internet, that this communication space returns to a condition which is conducive to make democracy work well, and which also empowers people to participate as citizens, properly informed citizens in democracy. And I would say there are some elements which are easier, namely streaming, you know, having a content cloud for the Mediatek content, also translation. I mean, there can be some issues in translation already. It's very important, for example, that we treat the smaller languages in the same way than the bigger languages. But I would say in this area, the technological challenges are more less. While when we come to the nature of the search algorithm, I think we have to differentiate between two things. One is the recommender system, second is search. I think in both, I at least would say for a starting point on this public platform, my ambition would be to use as little as possible prior behavior of people, but only work on the content and which exists and not try to target people and to try to profile them according to their prior behavior on the internet, or for that matter on these platforms. So it's very important, I would think, for example, that people can use this public platform without having locked in somewhere, you know, that they can just use it and maybe the platform doesn't know who they are. and what their prior behavior was. I think that would be important. And I would agree with Nicola that in terms of the recommendation system, the recommendation system must be one which is optimized towards a different function. The recommendation systems on Facebook, Google, and other commercial websites are optimized towards maximizing revenue by keeping people as long as possible on the platform and then advertising to them or even selling directly to them, you know, the so-called conversion rate of clicks on the website and then making people really buy something. That is the big price of the algorithms in private industry. While on such a public website, the purpose is to support democracy. So I think there must be a different measure of relevance. And I think the measure of relevance will be very much the measure of the editors, of the independent editors of who produce this content and who produce the news. And I would say it is true that prior use by others in terms of the statistics, for example, you know, how many people have watched this, how many people have watched that, you know, that can also be important elements. In the end, I would think there is a difference in the duty of a station, a public TV station, which is fully editorial, where I would say the job of the editors is, for example, in the news emission, to make people see not only things they want to see, but, you know, to show and tell people what they think, namely what the editors think is important. This is the job of the top editor of the news. While on the platform, there will be no editorial intervention. It will just be a collection of pre-existing edited journalistic content. The search algorithm has to be rather neutral. I mean, it has to, you know, respond to the search words of the people. And I would say this needs to be explained both on the website and also elsewhere. We need a new type of discourse and not only transparency, but also pedagogic work on explaining the function and relevance of recommender and search algorithms compared to human editing, which I think will remain very, very important. I do believe in the critical ability of journalists to question and to investigate. These are all things algorithms can't do. And we must put these tools of then in the end deciding what we see next to each other, these mechanisms with humans doing certain jobs and algorithms doing certain jobs. But I think the ambition of the platform should be to present to all European citizens the fantastic journalistic products which come out of our public and private TV stations and which also come out of citizens' TV stations at the outset. And then in the future, one can think about next steps, but I'm a great friend of starting with things which are manageable and simple. I know that there are people who say you have to add social media to it, or some say, you know, everybody should upload, be able to upload the content. Since we are now in Austria, there's a very a well-known publicist in Austria who has written a fantastic book and says we need a European YouTube. I think all this is right. But when it comes to putting things into practice, I'm a great friend of starting with something manageable and rather small. And once it's in place, I think the good thing about the digital is if there's hunger for it, we can enlarge it. What I would not like to see now is that we have endless discussions about the perfect website or the perfect way to do it, and we don't get the practical implementation going. I think the time has come to now move very fast to practical implementation. And I think in that context, your association and also the technological knowledge you and others, civil society, media initiatives have is very important. And that's another reason I think why it would be great if you participate in this. It's not only for your content, but it is also for your knowledge about your way of organizing streaming, and your way of looking at algorithms and so on. I think we all have to learn from each other. This is cutting edge stuff. And I would say the technical intelligentsia and I mean, you know, the programmers and IT knowledgeable people, I think some of them can also find their way back to think about democracy when participating in such projects. I think that's also very important. If we move into a society which is more and more dominated by technology, I think we also need projects, and this is one, which allows to re-engage technologists with democratic ideas and democratic processes. And so I think it's great that we have this discussion today, and I hope you stick with it.
Thank you, Paul, for your approach and invitation to get into a collaboration. We also are absolutely convinced of the necessity to collaborate on this big task of building a digital public space. I would like to present briefly an idea concerning how handling of data could work, but Nicola, you just wanted to answer ad hoc to Paul's remarks.
Yes, thank you. If I may, I mean, a couple of remarks. The centralized platform, I mean, or a European platform, which we are currently not offering, that you said that very correctly, Paul, is of course something which I think midterm or long term should happen, certainly. Now, one of the main, let's say, problems is still the famous copyright question. So, I mean, we've discussed this long and large at European level. The problem, we even for our decentralized way of working, we really have an issue with this, because a lot of pictures which are contained in public service media's news items come from other sources, are not their own pictures. They're from agencies or other sources. So for that, they usually only have the right to publish it on their own websites. Then in this project which we have, they have a system where they put for the use of the other members those items where the copyright is cleared. And over the last 8 months, this was a lot. 6,500 stories were shared, but it could have been much more, but we were limited by copyright questions. And that is, if you now create a centralized a European platform, this problem will not go away. It will even become bigger. So that's something which needs to be addressed. Otherwise, it will be very, very difficult. At the same time, the amount of stories shared, over 6,500 stories over the last eight months, and there will be more and more and more. When you have all those in one platform and you offer it just for search to the users, to the audience, they will be overwhelmed. And in some kind, I agree that, of course, a neutral search is a good thing, but at the same time, you will very quickly go into this problem again that people only search certain things and will not look at others. What our journalists do, and you mentioned this also, Paul, is they have this editorial role of bringing content and enlarging sort of the viewers' access to news. This is an editorial role which a simple tech platform, I don't think, can really fulfill. So there will we will need some kind of moderation there if it's really a useful operation. So certain remarks on what you said earlier. I also agree. I mean, whatever we do, if it's really something which is going to work, it will need some public funding, European funding or elsewhere. That is very clear. The project we are running is co-funded, and there is already a lot of input from Pavos Media, from their side, in terms of time, resources, and so on, which is not funded under the project, but part of it is funded, so that's very useful. And then just to say that, of course, we're happy to talk with other stakeholders, civil society also, to see how to bring this forward, but there are a couple of, let's say, regulatory issues which have to still be addressed.
Thank you, Nicola, also for the invitation to collaborate on building this. Maybe Paul, may I briefly outline two ideas here. On the one hand, yes, we understand also the copyright issues as tremendously dwelling, and I mean, our solution on that is to work with open licensed content. So I think the way how journalists are paid at the moment somehow suffers drawbacks, because as we see now, for sharing, it doesn't work. So I think we should come to a situation where journalists will get upfront better payment, and therefore would then not be paid for rebroadcasting or for further rights that they will give then for broadcasting abroad. I think here we need a shift in the system. And the second thing is, concerning this data aspect, there is an idea published in the book Building a Digital Public Space. The author is Katja Bego, and her idea is that we could build up like this idea of federating platforms. We could also build up a system of data trustees, where you have where the consumer offers to have the data there, also personal data of that show user behavior stored at data trustees, and so that they are safe and GDPR conform. But the users themselves can then decide for which purposes others could use this data. And so that we get out of the silos we have at the moment, with where Google and Facebook and Amazon are sitting on this big amount of data, and we do not have access and cannot use these data to develop algorithms that are really powerful. So I think this would be an approach that we should also find a solution at how we can collaborate across the sectors. And Paul, you wanted to answer or respond to Nicola, and then I don't know, Ms. Kaili, are you still in the call, or?
Okay, just
I think the 30 minutes are over.
I would like to say that I think if one starts only with the political news, of course there will be some contributions which will be with pictures of others, in particular the foreign news. But I think there's enough content which is produced by the stations themselves. And the important thing is, in 27 countries, it will be very different content. So I think it is not a good idea to hold out the copyright issue as a killing obstacle. I think we can start without changing the legislation. And I also want to be quite clear. It is actually probably very easy to change the legislation. I need one sentence to change the legislation just for this one European public interest platform infrastructure. Yes, that it would be the place where these rights cannot be invoked. I think that would be very easy. But I don't think it's necessary at the start. I'm confident that we will find a solution which goes, in the beginning at least, far enough. And as you know, the better is the enemy of the good. Let's not try to be perfect. Let's just get going with the content, as Nicola said. You know, in her system, in the EU, there are 6,500, and it could be much more, but that's, I'm really, you know, that one can always do better. But the fact that there may be some copyright issues in some of the contributions doesn't mean that we can't start. The second remark is on being overwhelmed. If you tell people today that they are overwhelmed because there's too much content, you have to ask yourself, why is YouTube so successful? I think this argument is not pertinent. The amount of content which will be on this platform will be extremely small compared to the content people face today in the big search engines whether it's the general internet search engines like Google or YouTube. And again, let's not make things too complicated. And the third point is the editorial function of the journalistic stations is not at all put in question. It continues. And I'm sure that no viewer will not view anymore the journalistic work of the national station if they from time to time go to the European platform. So what I want to say is that this platform doesn't need to follow the pattern of what the EBU thinks it's important for its station. The whole idea is to do something else. And nobody in the EBU will lose anything. No national station will lose a viewer, but we are creating an alternative possibility, an offer. And I'm quite sure it will not be a super, super mass success, and no national station needs to worry about that its content is being cannibalized now through this new playout channel, and people will rather go to the European platform than to the national platform. I think that will not happen. And let's not thus create, you know, all those mental obstacles, which actually, if we think about it, may be much smaller. So I would wish that we keep this project simple and that we move forward fast and we do what in Silicon Valley they would call the minimal viable option, and we go out with it with the help of civil society and others who are willing, and then we see you know, how it flies, and we optimize it then while it's running.
Great, and, Paul, thank you.
So I would invite everybody to think in those terms, and I realize that the EBU is a very, very big and very important, great organization, very complex. And I also realize that the national stations have many, many different interests. I just hope that they can get themselves around to simply contribute the content which they choose to contribute in terms of political news in the future to this platform. And if not everybody wants to contribute, then some will start contributing. I see it in the EBU projects. It's never all stations. There are some stations which think, you know, for some reasons they don't want to play ball. This will also be the case for the European platform. I'm not worried about this. But what I think is important is that we get going and we demonstrate it can be done. And the more we demonstrate it can be done, the more this factual reality will it create an incentive for others to participate. And it will create also a situation where they have to increasingly justify why they are not playing ball.
Thank you, Paul. This was also the keyword, participation. So I wanted to ask in the audience if there are any questions to join the debate. Maybe this was just a little bit too abrupt, but here is Volker.
Yeah, Volker Grossmann from the STEPS Alliance. On the tricky copyright issue that you have been discussing, I wonder, so the 2019 online ZatCup satellite and cable directive has a provision that essentially allows broadcasters who run an ancillary service and put specific programs, and that is news and current affairs programs, as well as programs that are fully financed by the public service broadcaster, to make that content available not only in that single country, but across borders throughout Europe. And I haven't seen much effect of that, so I would like to ask the European lawmakers, members of parliament, what the possible outcome is and what the opportunity is that I'm seeing here. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I see an opportunity here that is not being used yet. Thank you.
Is somebody here in the floor to Paul, do you want to answer this question?
Yeah, give me 5 minutes. I have to find the provision. Maybe Nicola knows about it. I mean, this is a provision which is very relevant for public TV stations. They should know about it.
Article 3, it's apparently.
If you want me to briefly answer? That's fine. I mean, the issue about that is that it means that a public broadcaster can make available this content from its own website across borders, so it doesn't have to be geo-blocked. Huh? But that does not mean that you can republish it elsewhere in a different country. That's a limitation of that. And that's why we have this issue also in this project. So because what essentially happens is that the members who participate in this in our project republish the items on their own website. And that is not covered by this provision.
Okay, I have not found the provision now, but let me say that as far as the centralized platform is concerned, there are, of course, different technology options which one has to design, of course, in the way that the law is best used. And the streaming, which takes place effectively, it can take place via the centralized platform, but it could also take place directly from the mediatheque of the supplier. So this platform would just search and then, you know, like Google does it now, link you to the national platform, and that's where you get the content from. So maybe this provision, I'm thankful for you for this contribution, could actually help in this context. Thank you.
Here's another question.
Hi, Vladimir from CMFE and podcast.rs. Just not so much a question, but rather a comment from our kind of a podcasting world. This is how it works. We use the RSS feed, so this could be a kind of a probably the same option that the content would be on the original platforms, and then via the RSS feed, it could be just on the other platform. So when you access it, it is still on the original platform. So maybe just something to think about.
You could even add subtitles in different languages to that.
Please repeat the question.
Yes, thank you. That's also an option. You see, this is why such discussions are so great. We have to bring all this new knowledge to optimize the system in terms of technology, but also in terms of the interrelationship between law and technology together. So I'm noting all these things here now. It's good.
We have a remark and a question out of the Matrix room that goes along with the conference by Arnold Scriver. And the remark is that Arnold says that it's very important to encourage and foster open standards in this entire approach. This kind of aligns also to your reminder of RSS is a very old standard that still works well in what it does, and that there's already a lot of those standards out there that align with the visions of open, decentralized, sovereign web, and that open standards will allow all our different initiatives to converge, and we don't get an ineffective splinter web that cannot make a fist against big tech. I think we all agree, but it's also something to keep in mind when going into the next bigger step to not isolate again. And then there was also a question that was regarded to Eva Kiley, who is not with us anymore, but maybe someone of the other panelists want to comment on it nevertheless. And it was around the two EU platforms that were launched recently, EU Voice and EU Video, which have brought a number of official European Commission and European Union accounts to the Fediverse universe. If someone of you knows if there are plans to bring further EU bodies to these platforms or even extend them for other things or any new developments around these two platforms. I think it's the first time that the EU launches like social media platforms that can federate and interact with other corners of the web.
Does anyone take
Yes. So these are accounts which, let's say, are the official public relations and communication accounts of the Commission. And I think also on Mastodon, we have now a number of accounts from different institutions. All this, I think, is good, but we should strictly separate the discussion about how the EU institutions, the Commission, the Parliament, the Council, make public communication and how they organize their channels on the one hand. This is, let's say, government public communication. It's important, but that's one thing. Another thing is what we discuss here in terms of the democratic public sphere, where the journalism as a force, a state, you know, has a function to control government and to control power. And I would say, of course, in a democracy, it's important how the government communicates and, you know, right of asking questions and right to access to information. We have all these rules in Europe. And also, you know, do we communicate in open source and do we allow APIs to be linked into our press database, or for that matter, into the database of amendments in the European Parliament? All these are important questions, but they are different from the question how we make sure that the journalistic content, which is produced with the ambition of the force as state function, namely controlling power, holding to account governments, EU institutions, powerful companies also, and how this is dispersed and how people can build their opinion based on true and researched information, hopefully true, at least produced by institutions which have the ambition to produce true information, rather than being drowned in the cacophony of the internet with all its fake news, propaganda, and so on.
Absolutely, Paul. Since we have just 4 minutes left for the discussion, I would briefly ask to have a final remark, and would like to start with Paul Rübig to give him the opportunity to have his closing remark.
Yes, thank you so much. I think overall it's a very interesting debate about our European media space. And of course, first of all, what I have learned, we have to stabilize the infrastructure. So the key question is, how can we get better engaged in the fiber rollout? How can we get back the old copper decentralization activities? I think we need more platforms on the infrastructure level, like shortwave, that in the case of emergency, that we don't have a communication breakdown. And you know, with the war in Ukraine, attacks from the cyber side or from the power side are possible in very short term. So is our infrastructure in the telecom and in the broadcasting area connected with enough stable power supply? So how do we manage battery systems? Where are the infrastructure, where is it installed to have security of supply? I think that's a critical question, where also in private household you should have a shortwave radio with a battery, and maybe where you can run your radio with a physical a production where you produce your energy yourself. It's all is available, but I think this communication pattern are from utmost important. And if we have spoken today about the Polish and the Hungarian side, on the other side, I see in Germany, that the East German attitude of communistic approach with Gysi and Wagenknecht and a lot of these activities are also very strong. And I appreciate, I really enjoy it. But what I want to have, I always want to see both sides, because I think the civil society has the right to hear both sides and to build their own opinion. And I think that's what we need in journalism to give free choice and free speech to everybody in our society. And the decision making, of course, will be done in the elections. And that's what makes me so proud on our democratic system. And that there's also a competition between private and public media space. And that the best will survive, and we will see it in the quotas. It's, I think, the right thing to do, to enjoy our communication, because communication is life. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Paul Rübig. Thank you for joining the debate. Nicola, everything fine. Nicola, can I ask you for your final remark?
Yes, thank you, and thank you for this good discussion. I would say that we are at the beginning of a journey. We have contributed to this, or we are contributing to this public European space or sphere, whatever you want to call it, with a particular and specific project. We are happy to discuss how to enlarge this project to other stakeholders and to benefit from our experience in this context. We have developed a search and recommendation system and also an AI-supported translation system, which works well but needs to be further developed. In any case, what we want to do is we want to contribute to empowering really citizens to take good decisions in the democratic system and to offer the maximum of pluralist content. Do this from our side, but also do this together with others. And so this is really an invitation to continue the debate, and thank you for this important initiative.
Thanks a lot. Paul Nimitz, your final remark. Paul Nimitz, your final remark?
Yes. I think we had a good discussion today, also some questions and hints from the audience. I must say, I watched very carefully what's happening in the space. I think the EBU project is great. It has a lot of elements which are fantastically going in the right direction. But I would also say we live in a time of incredible change. We now have a war in Europe, which is a war against democracy. And in the same way that we are now having decided, to strengthen our armies, I think on the media space and on providing infrastructure to secure the democracy, it's also very, very urgent. So we must move forward fast to realization to make these things happen. And in doing so, we have to remember that we cannot only have a public media space, we need a mixed media space between private and public, and where the choice is broad. I'm personally a great friend of public media, but I also realize that if you have only public media or too much of it, if then the government starts to control the public media, we have a problem. So I think what we must look at is the mix. There must be a mix, there must be competition, and at least my idea for the platform in Europe would be that we invite both the private and public TV producers and civil society TV, anybody who has content which has journalistic ambition to contribute. And we will start small with this, but I'm hopeful it is a contribution which, may not solve all problems of this world, but which will enlarge the choice of people, and then we will have to see where it goes. So thank you very much for this discussion, and I'm sure we will have many more. And I could imagine also that the different ideas and projects which are now underway, that they converge in some elements in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Yeah, this would be also a wish from my side that the ideas converge, and I see it as a kickoff of a collaborative debate how to define and develop the digital public space, which also shows the whole diversity we and plurality we have in Europe. Thanks a lot for joining us here at the debate. And yes, we're gonna close the discussion now and gonna have a break for the next debate then on funding issues, how to get there. Thanks a lot. Have a nice afternoon. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.